we're so used to seeing things that, in my opinion, aren't quite right in our treatment of animals.
Yeah, the less we eat, the less violence is being done, and the less destruction to the environment.
Everyone eats, and everyone has to make a moral decision every time that we sit down to the table.
Welcome to the Animal Voices Radio Show, Western Canada's only radio program focusing on animal advocacy and compassionate living.
Today is Friday, November the 4th, 2016. I am your host, Jen Dobell, and I'm joined in studio today by my co-host, Sinead Saunders.
Hello.
And our operator, Carrie. Thanks for being here today, Carrie. I just want to give a shout out to my dad. It's his birthday today. Happy birthday, Dad. And also our producer, Allison Cole, had a birthday this week. She's in Hawaii right now. I wonder what she's doing.
Well, I think we can bet she's not swimming with captive dolphins.
No, animal rights activists know better than to support that cruel enslavement of highly intelligent, sentient beings.
And then I guess she's not at the Honolulu Zoo.
No way. Animal rights activists know better than to support that cruelty.
But what if it's educational and she would never get an opportunity to see these animals in the wild?
As we all know, there's very little educational value offered in these environments. And even if there was, we have no right to kidnap animals from their wild and free lives for our selfish desires. Animals in zoos live in misery, and Allison knows this. Allison can watch Planet Earth DVD series if she wants to learn about animals in their natural habitats.
As can everyone. You're absolutely right. If we can live happy, healthy lives without harming animals or sticking them in boxes, then why wouldn't we?
Absolutely, Sinead.
But aren't animals in aquariums and zoos rescued and therefore wouldn't survive in the wild?
That's often a lie told by the facilities who keep the animals captive.
Well, some of them say they're doing important research on animals in order to protect wild populations. What about that, then?
Well, again, this is often a lie. A true rescuer research sanctuary does not exploit animals for profit. We always have to scratch beneath the surface of what we're told by organizations who use animals for profit.
Absolutely. More of us should be doing that.
Have fun in Hawaii, Allison. We know you're being humane over there.
Happy birthday, Allison.
So later on in the show, we're going to feature an interview with Canadian photojournalist Joanne MacArthur, who turned her passion for photography into a way to show the plight of animals who are dominated by humans. Her photos evoke a strong emotional response and a plea for help. We will also chat with the Vancouverite Ali Fluvog, whose dog Maggie was hit by a SkyTrain last weekend after running away scared by the fireworks at Trout Lake Park. We will provide advice for you to make a difference for animals in the hopes of preventing future tragedies like this one. Stay tuned for that interview and a call to action. Sinead, did you hear about last weekend's very successful public earthling screening downtown?
I did hear about that. How did that go?
It actually was really successful. And just a couple days ago, I saw a Mark Twain quote that reminded me of the situation where we're always trying to get people to look at what's really going on in our food system. And the quote goes, "It is easier to fool people than to convince them that they have been fooled." Isn't that relevant?
Absolutely. Yep.
So we have an interview from one of the guests of the Earthlings screening that was put on, and we will play that now. Last weekend, some animal rights activists put on a screening of Earthlings, but an interesting thing is that they didn't tell anybody what the film was actually about. It was advertised as a Halloween horror film, and anyone who came was promised $10 if they could get through it. And today I have Ashley on the phone, and she was in attendance. She's been a vegan for 10 years. She's an activist and an environmentalist. Welcome, Ashley.
Hi.
So can you tell our listeners how you heard about the film?
Yeah, actually, me and my fiance were just looking for something to do for Friday night Halloween, and your ad for the Do You Dare horror show just popped up on my screen. And I'm like, wow, you know, this sounds really interesting. We're horror buffs ourselves, so we figured let's go check it out. The fact that you guys weren't charging anything for it, and then the fact that you did that $10 in there was kind of a little bit extra incentive, I'm not going to lie.
And I was sitting behind you, Ashley, and I didn't know you before this night. And the screening started, and anyone who's seen Earthlings a couple of times knows the very distinctive soundtrack. And it starts off with just some text on the screen. So I think at this point, most people had no idea that it was an animal rights documentary. But you recognized the soundtrack and turned around to me and you said, "I'm so glad you guys are screening this." And I said, "Oh, have you seen it?" And you said, "Yeah, I'm vegan." And I said, "Well, you don't have to stay. This is for people that aren't vegan, so we'll still give you your money." What were you thinking in that moment?
Well, the first thing was, you know, keep your $10 and just thank you for doing this, because there really are so few people out there that go and they're actually active in it and willing to kind of put themselves out there in that way. And then the fact that I kind of decided to stay through it was I wanted to see people's reaction to this video, see how many people got up and left in the first 10 minutes when they started comparing the slaughter and the abuse of animals to racism, slavery, etc., etc. Because you know right there, that's a hot point. So I just kind of wanted to see how it panned out, and that's about it.
I was really surprised at how many people stayed in the room, weren't you?
Yes, I was. The fact that after that first 20, 30 minutes, the amount of people that stayed behind, there were certain points in the movie where I was just expecting people to get up and leave because of how graphic it is. But it was really, like, heartwarming in a way to see the amount of people that stayed. Now, I really hope a lot of them weren't just staying and remaining through that for the $10 incentive, and they actually wanted to educate themselves on the cause.
Well, that would have been an interesting experiment to see whether they were staying for the money or because for the cause. I don't think $10 is enough for someone to want to sit through that. It's pretty hard to get through, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. You can't not get emotional when you're watching something like that, because these are living beings. Anytime you sit there and you look at an animal, you're like watching their life story. They're so complex and they have feelings just like we do. And to have that in front of you, it is. Like in the first 5 minutes, I was sitting there trying just not to bawl when they were going to the fur farms and testing. And it's so heart-wrenching.
Yeah, and I noticed that most people weren't even looking away, and very few people were texting on their phones, which you find in most movie theaters, even for a film that people do want to see. So I was really impressed with everyone there, and I said to them at the end, "I wish I could give you all a hug for staying." Did you stick? You stuck around afterwards for the food, though, didn't you? Let's talk about that.
Yes, I did. You guys had some great vegan food laid out from Guardian, all the cutlets and the meatless meat, the different sorts of cheeses. I got to find out that there's a vegan cheese maker in Vancouver, which I didn't know of before. So it definitely gave me some new options as far as expanding my vegan menu. Because, you know, things get kind of repetitive after a while when you have such limited things that you can, you know, put together.
And that vegan cheesemaker, I just want to plug my friend Paula. That's Parthenon Grocery Store in Kitsilano, and the cheese that she makes that I'm recommending is the Borsan, and it's herb and garlic, and there's also a jalapeno one, and it's so good. It's cashew based. Unfortunately, we didn't have samples that day, but I hope you go get some.
Oh, I definitely will, especially if there's a jalapeno version.
And Ashley, I'm just curious to know, since I haven't met you before that night, what do you do for activism? Do you try to get people to see that film, or what's your strategy?
Oh, I do completely. My strategy, I'm really active on the social media side of things. I'm connected to all the groups like Mercy for Animals, Vancouver Vegans, you know, the Farm Sanctuaries. I try and get as much literature out there as possible and circulate it through. I'm also in my day-to-day life just going through and speak to people, and they're like, "Okay, well, I don't eat things with four legs, but I eat chicken. Well, why? What's your distinction?" So just getting out there, right?
Yeah, we hear that one a lot, don't we? Oh, I just have a little chicken and fish now and then.
Yeah, that's a big one.
Yeah, it's tough. Well, thanks so much for coming, and I'm really happy that you stayed, and I'm happy to have you on board for future events, Ashley.
Oh, it was a great time, and it was great meeting everyone as well, and anything I can do for you guys in the future.
Yeah, we'll be in touch for sure. Thanks for your time today.
Thank you. Have a good night.
Okay.
And we're hoping to put on more public Earthlings screenings in the future. That was such a success. And of course, it's always easier with Halloween because you can definitely promote it as a horror movie and more people will come.
Absolutely.
Another event that occurred last weekend was a tragedy involving a dog named Maggie, who was hit by a SkyTrain after running frightened from the sound of fireworks at Trout Lake Park. Did you hear about this, Sinead?
Yes, that was pretty horrific news.
Mm-hmm. It's made me pretty sad, and I've definitely seen the news all over every social media space, and all the news organizations are talking about it,
mm-hmm.
and the story is still unfolding. I had an opportunity to speak with a former SPCA officer who told me how badly fireworks impact animals and shelters. Shelters are already overrun, and the days after fireworks, even the weeks after, they're overrun with phone calls dealing with animals who've been brought in off the street, who have run away from home, and shelter staff often have to chase animals in the streets to rescue them, causing danger to everybody involved. She let me know that most people hate working those weeks following fireworks. Did you know that a town in Italy has banned the use of noisy fireworks? Only silent ones are allowed?
Yeah, I heard about that. And given everything that you just said, it seems like that's something we should be exploring, because it hardly seems worth it. Because, not only are fireworks harmful to companion animals, but wild animals and the environment and people suffering from PTSD. I've heard stories of that as well. People suffering from breathing problems. And it's all unnecessary. There's also all the garbage they leave behind, not only from the fireworks themselves, but at beaches and parks. After public events, there's garbage everywhere. And it hardly seems worth it to me. If we've got other options, then we should go ahead and explore those.
That's right. I would be happy to see them banned, or at the very least made silent. Last summer, we had another similar tragedy during the Canada Day fireworks. One of our local activists' cat was killed by a coyote after running away frightened from the noise. Sinead, have you signed any of the online petitions seeking to ban fireworks, which are circulating as a result of these events?
Yes, there are a few going around. We've actually got a link to a petition on our Facebook page and webpage, animalvoices.org.
So I had an opportunity to talk to Maggie's owner, Ali Fluvog. Let's listen to that interview now. Today I'm speaking with Ali Fluvog about the tragic accident involving her dog Maggie. Ali, would you tell us what happened?
Sure. So on Saturday, the 29th of October, at around 4 o'clock in the afternoon, I went out for a walk with my family, which we often do. There was a break in the rain, so the Trout Lake Park was busy and lots of families out. My husband took our youngest son and our dog Maggie to the off-leash dog area at Trout Lake Park, and I stayed with my older son and some neighbors at the playground. I got a call from my husband soon after playing at the playground, arriving at the playground, saying that somebody had let off some firecrackers or fireworks very close to the dog beach, and Maggie had bolted. Because I was between the park and our house, we expected that she would be running towards me. So right away, I took my son and got our neighbors and their kids, and we went out to look for Maggie, expecting her to run by any minute. We didn't see her, so my husband called our tenant at our house to see if she was at home. She wasn't, but he waited outside and opened the gate, so in case she did go home, there was somebody there for her. But she didn't show up, so my husband went home and got on his bike, and along with my neighbors and my kids, we went through the park and the neighborhood canvassing people if they'd seen a large black dog running frightened. We met a lot of concerned people at that time, but unfortunately, nobody had seen her. And she had run east from where my husband had been. So it was starting to get a bit darker. And then up at the top of my street, I met a woman who told me that there was a dog matching Maggie's description running on the SkyTrain tracks. So immediately I called my husband saying, meet me at the SkyTrain. Maggie may be there. And I ran over with my kids. When we got there, My husband got there first, and he sort of jumped a turnstile, started looking for her everywhere. She was nowhere to be found. The trains were stopped at that time, which I didn't know if it was a good thing or a bad thing. At that point, we kind of, we called the SkyTrain officials, and they said, or using the courtesy phone, and they said, yes, we're aware of the incident. Somebody will come and speak with you. At that point, we thought maybe we were going to be in trouble for our dog running on the SkyTrain. We didn't really know what to expect. A SkyTrain official, she came down to speak with us. She sort of told me to go to one side with my kids, and she took my husband aside and told him what had happened. And then basically she said that Maggie had been on the tracks and that some SkyTrain staff had been trying to coax her off, but that she was struck by a train and died. And no, we couldn't see her because it wasn't a pretty sight. She was very empathetic. She's a dog owner herself, and she was really upset about this. I broke down. Couldn't really believe what she was telling me. So she brought us to a small room in the SkyTrain station where we sat and sort of processed what was going on. She asked us what we wanted to do with the remains. It was all very bizarre. We gave all our contact number information and left. And as we were leaving, I saw the two attendants who had been trying to help Maggie, and they were just crestfallen. Their faces were ashen. One man was shaking. He couldn't even talk. He just looked so upset. But he wasn't really allowed to speak with me. He was brought away. And then some transit police came. They brought us Maggie's collar. They took my husband aside, spoke with him, and then gave us his card, and then we went home. We weren't given a lot of details about what happened, but at that time, I think I was so overwhelmed that I couldn't quite deal with it. And then that night, I'm part of a Facebook group called Dog Lovers of Trout Lake. I posted her story as a warning to others to keep your dog close during the fireworks. And there was a lot of media attention, and her story has been made public.
And since the news story broke about Maggie being hit by the SkyTrain, an employee anonymously contacted the media and said that this tragic accident could have been avoided. Now the SPCA is investigating. Will you comment on this?
Yeah, so I'm so thankful to this employee who did come forward, this whistleblower. From what I understand, the employees saw what was being reported on the news, and they're like, that is not what happened. One employee who contacted me had filed a report of what had happened and shown it to all his superiors, and his manager pressured him to change the story, and he refused, and for that I thank him. He's since asked for all of the footage under the Freedom of Information Act. He's asked for all the footage and the transcripts from the night. The BCSPCA was contacted by the employee as well, and and myself, I've filed a complaint with them, and they've launched a full investigation. I won't know any of the details of that until the end of the investigation, but I'm glad that people are looking into this and that there will be some accountability.
And what were your feelings toward fireworks before this incident?
I'm from Ontario, and we didn't have fireworks like this in Halloween, so I always found it very strange. After adopting a rescue dog, I would get quite stressed around Halloween for her. She's a dog who came to us quite beaten and skittish, and we worked with her and trainers over the years to rehabilitate her. She's come a long way, and she's a wonderful family dog. But every year at Halloween, she would be hiding in our closet or hiding in the bathtub because she was so afraid of the fireworks. A number of my friends who have dogs are also face the same predicament every Halloween because it's terrifying for the dogs. And we were out during the day on Saturday. It wasn't nighttime. We know better than to take our dog out after dark. But we thought, it's not Halloween. It's 4 o'clock in the afternoon. We're going to an off-leash park. We thought we shouldn't have, I guess, let her off leash. And with that, I'm so sorry. But she was in an off-leash area. She wasn't the only dog who bolted from that park, but she was the only one that was hit by a SkyTrain.
It's really tragic, and thank you so much for sharing your story. And the reason we're having you on today, of course, is to make sure that this death isn't in vain. And we will be circulating a petition on our website, animalvoices.org, and as well as on Facebook in that Dog Lovers of Trout Lake group and others, to ban fireworks, or at the very least have silent fireworks as they do in a town in Italy. It's a bylaw there that they must have silent fireworks, and this is for the animals.
Great. And I should also add that I did hear from my MLA, Adrian Dix, of the Kingsway catchment, and he's bringing this issue forward with City Councillor Andrea Raymer later on in the week, which is and she's taken an interest in it, so hopefully something will come of this.
That's great. I like Andrea on these types of issues, actually, so that's great. Yeah. Well, I'm so sorry for your loss. You've got me in tears here, and thanks for sharing your story.
Okay, thank you. Okay. And thanks for your interest. I hope something can be done.
We will fight until it is, for sure.
Thank you. Thanks so much.
So if you were inspired by that story to take action for sweet little Maggie and any other animals who suffer because of fireworks, again, you can go to our website, animalvoices.org, where we've posted a petition. It's not the only petition. This story has inspired many people to start petitions, either banning fireworks, banning just the personal use of fireworks, or at least banning ones that make noise. So please go to our website and sign that and share that to your social media. And now we have some news and events with Sinead.
Yeah. So there are a few events coming up tonight. There is a screening, tonight being Friday, November the 4th. There's a screening downtown of a documentary made by Sea Shepherd. Come join Sea Shepherd Conservation Society for a screening of their first full-length documentary, Why Just One? Saving the World's Last Dinosaur. From death threats to attacks, from protecting sea turtles and their eggs to interviews with activists, Why Just One seeks to answer the question of why only one in 1,000 sea turtles survive to maturity. Last year, Sea Shepherd launched a campaign to defend sea turtles in Costa Rica, Honduras, and Florida, and they saved more than 12,000 sea turtles and eggs last year alone. So the documentary highlights what they're doing for turtles, what we can do for turtles, and what we need to be doing for turtles. The screening is at the VSO School of Music, which is 843 Seymour Street. That's at Robson. The tickets are $12 at the door. Doors are at 6:30. The show is at 7. And please come early because space is limited. You can find out more info on the screening and the film at www.seashepherd.org.
I have a date tonight, and I think we're going to do that. I always try to bring dates to animal rights events for two reasons. One, because I would prefer to do an animal rights event than anything that most people do for social activities, because I find it mentally stimulating. But also, I'm always trying to veganize my dates, so I'll let you know how it goes. Yeah. That sounds great. Are you going to come?
I don't think I'm going to be able to make it tonight, but I'm going to see if I can, because it sounds like a really interesting film. So I hope that hopefully they'll do some more screenings as well, or maybe they'll put it online.
Sea Shepherd does a lot of awesome screenings, by the way, everybody. If you want to check out their webpage and go see as many as you can, they're always good.
Mm-hmm. And there's another screening coming up on Monday, this Monday, November 7th. Of a documentary called Trophy, which is presented by Lush Cosmetics, and it challenges the controversial practice of trophy hunting. The killing of grizzlies for sport is sanctioned in BC, and the province claims it's necessary to maintain a balance in nature and provide economic advantages. Yet, conservationists and activists say otherwise, as they have on this show in the past. With the flawed science, political motivations, and unbalanced economics, can we justify killing these animals for sport? So the film is about 30 minutes long. It's at the Van City Theater downtown at 1181 Seymour Street, 6:30 to 8 p.m. at the Van City Theater. There will be a panel discussion following the screening with the filmmaker as well as experts from various conservation groups. And tickets are free, and the bad news is that they are currently sold out.
Oh, I wanted to go. My calendar was filling up there.
But that's okay. You can see this movie possibly anyway. If you're interested in getting tickets, they're going to be more released closer to Monday, and you can find out info on that on their website, trophyfilm.com. And if you can't make it to the screening, then you can actually watch the movie for free on their website. So there you go. It's only half an hour. Watch it at home or try to make it to the screening with the panel discussion. Let's make sure that this is a conversation ahead of the provincial election this coming spring. Grizzlies, trophy hunting, it matters. Yeah. Let's end it.
Speaking of this event, I just want to give a shout out to Lush. I've addressed them a few times asking for donations for fundraisers for animals. Before I can even get the sentence out of my mouth, they've got a gift basket in their hand to give me. They are so generous. I wish that one day they would go completely vegan with their cosmetics. They still use eggs and I think maybe something else. So there's something to strive toward, but a very generous organization that does so much to give back to the community and for animals. So thank you, Lush, for putting that on.
For sure, for sure. There's another Sea Shepherd event coming up in a couple of weeks. On Sunday, November the 20th, Sea Shepherd has planned a beach cleanup at Vancouver's Crab Park in the downtown east side. Marine wildlife is threatened by millions of pounds of garbage being dumped into the oceans every year. So join Sea Shepherd to help protect marine animals and preserve the natural beauty of the downtown east side's only beachfront park. Buckets and bags are provided. Please bring your own work gloves and water and snacks and whatever else you need. And you can find more info on their Facebook page, Sea Shepherd Vancouver, Unceded Coast Salish Territories.
I haven't been to the beach since the summer. That would be a nice event.
It is. Shoreline cleanups are, you know, they're kind of sad, but they're also really fun. You know, you get together with a bunch of people, you find all sorts of weird stuff, and, you know, it's depressing that it winds up there, but you're cleaning it up, and it, you can find some pretty interesting things for sure. Mm-hmm. If you have an animal-friendly event that you would like to have announced on the show, please send us an email at radioanimalvoices@gmail.com or post it on our Facebook page, Animal Voices Vancouver. And now for the news. So this week, Anita Kreintz of the Thirsty Pig trial. Anita Kreintz had her fifth day in court last Tuesday. Anita Kreintz is the woman facing criminal mischief charges after offering water to thirsty pigs bound for slaughter in Ontario during the summer of last year. She currently faces up to $5,000 in fines and 6 months in jail. And she had two defense witnesses on the stand for her this week, including University of Toronto researcher David Jenkins, who invented the glycemic index and is also an advocate of veganism. She also had neuroscientist Lori Marino on taking the stand for her, who had some groundbreaking testimony. She testified in Anita's defense that pigs are at least as cognitively aware as a monkey. They have individual personalities. Also, they're one of the few species that can recognize themselves in a mirror. They have self-awareness, self-agency, and a sense of themselves within the social community. Each one is a unique individual. They screened some footage of from a slaughterhouse video that was filmed in Australia as part of the testimony, and Dr. Marino said that the high-pitched squeals in the video are distress calls. And this is all really exciting to be It's really exciting to hear these statements being made in court, being heard in court, and printed in mainstream media, because normally Animal Voices is one of the only places that talks about these types of angles. So agricultural organizations are saying that why are we watching Australian slaughterhouse footage? You know, pigs as individuals, that's beside the point, you know, and I'm just thinking, like, the videos aren't from Ontario. I'm pretty sure, like, maybe footage from Australia was used because farms and slaughterhouses make it as difficult as they possibly can for people to record what happens inside their walls. I mean, how much do you want to bet that high-pitched distress calls are coming from just about every slaughterhouse in Canada, including their own? So, and they say, well, she was tampering with someone's livelihood. This isn't about pig personhood. This is about someone tampering with products, with someone's livelihood. But what Anita's doing and what her lawyers are doing is pointing to the fact that that their livelihoods are based on unnecessary suffering. They say our concern is the focus is away from what is right. That's a quote from Christian Farmers Federation of Ontario. So maybe what they think is right then is to treat sentient animals like objects and compassionate humans like criminals. Mm-hmm. Does that sound right to you?
Yeah.
Yeah. So I hear a lot of people saying, like, oh, well, they are shifting the focus. And what about what Anita did? But, you know, yes, Anita tampered with someone's legal property, but the evidence being presented in court indicates that we shouldn't be legally defining intelligent, sentient, self-aware individuals as property. So it'll be interesting to see how this plays out. The trial resumes next Thursday, November 10th, and the Crown and Defense will be making closing arguments in March.
Well, there's absolutely no logical reason to be eating animals, especially with all the information out there these days about how unhealthy that is for our bodies, how it's raising healthcare costs and causing destruction to the planet in numerous ways. I think the only reason that I can understand for someone eating animals is they taste good. And just because I understand it doesn't mean I justify it. I love the taste of all the things I don't eat anymore. It's not because I stopped liking it. It's because I grew my compassion through watching that documentary, Earthlings, and forcing myself to see exactly what I was supporting. And you mentioned that somebody said that only happens in Australia or whatever. Animals go into a slaughterhouse and they come out chopped up into little pieces, and people think that something humane happens along the way. That is ridiculous.
Yeah. It might be delicious if it weren't so horrific.
Mm-hmm.
Speaking of which, so another story we've got going on here is a cow who was raised on a ranch just east of Calgary and slaughtered in the U.S. was found by the USDA to be infected with bovine tuberculosis. So this has resulted in 30 southeastern Alberta ranches being put under quarantine. And on Wednesday, the Canadian Food Inspection Agency said it started the process of destroying the entire index herd, which is the herd where the infected individual came from. The owner of the herd says this means killing 385 cows and calves, 51 bulls, and every other animal on the farm. Horses, cats, dogs, you name it, just in case they are infected. So, what is this disease that has a government agency killing hundreds of possibly healthy animals? Bovine tuberculosis is a chronic contagious bacterial disease. It's very rare in Canada and it's very difficult to detect. Symptoms vary greatly as the bacteria causes infections that can be devastating and kill the animal quickly, or it can remain dormant for long periods of time. Symptoms include pulmonary lesions and trouble breathing, nasal discharge, fever, loss of appetite. And the only way to get rid of bovine tuberculosis in cattle that we know of is to euthanize them. So does this affect only cattle? Other animals can contract the disease, like horses or goats or dogs, but it's much less likely and it's more common in wildlife like elk or deer. So that's what they're saying may have been the source of the infection to the cow surrounding wildlife in the area. And it spread through nose-to-nose contact when respiratory droplets are inhaled. So what about humans then? It has the potential to transmit to humans, but bovine TB generally does not pose a threat to public health in Canada. Only individuals who have extended close contact with an infected animal while it is alive are at risk of contracting the disease. And yet the Canadian Food Inspection Agency is having almost 450 animals on a single farm killed so far in order to keep the disease from spreading. So in this news coverage, I'm sort of reading it all and going, is there any concern for the animals here? But the owner of the infected farm is quoted as saying, they are destroying everything that makes us money, and it's going to take years to build that back up. So that's the narrative of most of the news coverage on this, which is pretty sad, because this is, yeah, as the Anita Kreins thing, this is animal agriculture, this is animals as products, this is suffering, and it's not necessary.
Right. Did you happen to catch the global news thread that was taking place after that story was announced? Everybody was commenting?
No, I sort of have a don't read the comments policy these days.
This is exactly why. It's entertaining at the very least. Some of the comments are ridiculous. You've got the vegan animal rights activists versus the farmers, and some people are presenting a lot of logic, and it's just being met with absolute silliness.
Because the disease, it's causing the farmers to suffer, and that's what they're all talking about. It's causing their businesses to suffer, but it's important to recognize that these businesses are built on suffering, and that suffering isn't discussed, because like bovine tuberculosis, it interferes with profits, and mm-hmm. that's where the bottom line is for them.
Well, I'm sure something else can be grown on that land.
Yes.
And now it's time for our feature interview with Joanne MacArthur, the photojournalist who is currently fundraising for her latest project, and let's hear about that.
Today I'm fortunate to have the opportunity to speak with an award-winning photojournalist, author, and educator, Joanne MacArthur, who has been documenting the plight of animals on all seven continents for over a decade. We Animals has become an internationally celebrated archive, and over 100 animal organizations have benefited from her photography, many of which continue to work closely with Joanne on stories, investigations, campaigns, and humane education. Her work has been featured in many books and publications such as National Geographic, Elle Canada, Canadian Geographic, Photo Life, The Huffington Post, and many more. Joanne is the subject of Canadian filmmaker Liz Marshall's acclaimed documentary, The Ghosts in Our Machine, and her first book, entitled We Animals, was published in 2013. Joanne is the recipient of countless awards. She hails from Toronto, Canada, and loves spending a bit of downtime there when she can. Joanne, thanks so much for making time for us on Animal Voices today.
Thank you so much. It's a pleasure to speak with you today.
How did you get into this line of work?
Well, I always had a passion for photography, so quite simple answer. I loved it until I pursued it, and I was interested in street photography, photojournalism, and humanitarian work, and eventually I realized that I could combine my passions, which were for photography and my love for animals and my concern and care for animals. And so it's been over 15 years now of documenting animal issues around the globe.
And what were you doing before that?
Well, I was in university. I was trying to find my way and doing all sorts of various jobs and traveling. I mean, I'm a big traveler. The camera is like, anyone who takes pictures knows that a camera is a passport into the lives of others. And that's something that really interests me. And I noticed that in photography, a lot of people were covering humanitarian issues and environmental issues, but few to no one, few to nobody was covering these invisible animals in our world. And by that, I mean not the charismatic megafauna. I mean, it's perfectly acceptable to see them on the cover of National Geographic and elsewhere. And I don't mean the pets and companion animals. We see them everywhere as well. They're represented everywhere. farms, not the hens, not the fox in fur farms, etc. And these animals suffer by the billions every year because of our desires and our greed and our ignorance. And so I decided to take up the camera to photograph specifically these animals to show how they live and die at our hands so that we could make changes and, you know, inspire people to live kinder lives.
And your current project is called Captive, which documents animals in captivity at zoos and aquariums, and is the follow-up to your previous book, We Animals, published in 2013, which documented through photography animals in the human environment. Humans are as much animals as the sentient beings we use for food, clothing, research, experimentation, work, entertainment, slavery, and companionship. Can you tell us about the making of these books?
Sure. I'll start with Captive. Captive is something we just announced this past week, and we being my publisher and I, and my publisher is Lantern Books. They also published We Animals, and we're doing Captive because it's timely. The question of zoos and captivity and aquaria and the ethics of keeping animals in these places is really finally in the mainstream. Since the making of the film Blackfish and other fantastic documentaries, and also since the tragic death of Harambe, the gorilla, who was recently shot and killed at a zoo. And so this is, you know, the conversation is happening now, and I wanted to contribute to this conversation by creating a book of images that show the way these animals live in boredom and show the tremblay of the background that we paint, you know, these jungle scenes we paint behind the gorilla or the, you know, behind the animals and all these things that are there to please us but make no difference to the animal. So the book is about highlighting their captivity, highlighting the enclosures and what they look like and what it might be like for them. And do you want to hear about the We Animals?
I'd love to hear about that book from 2013, yes.
Okay, well, my long-term project is called We Animals, and after over a decade of shooting for it, I thought it would be a good time to create the first We Animals book. And so it includes 10 years of work on all continents, from shooting with sea shepherd in the Antarctic or with their anti-whaling effort, to arable farming in Southeast Asia, poaching in Africa, factory farms worldwide. And so that was the first book. And considering both of these books are extremely depressing, they are doing well and people are buying them and people are talking about them. And that tells me that, you know, now is the time to be doing this, and that, because people want to know less and less now people are turning their backs on these issues. It's harder to avoid knowing and seeing these things. And I think that's why the books are doing well. We've launched a crowdfunding campaign for the Captive book, and we're aiming to raise $20,000 US, which will help us produce and print the book. And we've reached half our goal in about 5 days. And that's so interesting, again, because it's a really, really depressing book, but it tells me that people want to know and that people care, so it's really encouraging. It's a really encouraging time to be part of the animal rights movement, and what's happening right now is historical, and more people are taking part, and I just think that's fantastic. I mean, I wouldn't want to be anywhere else right now than participating and contributing to this movement.
And you were the main human subject in director Liz Marshall's 2013 documentary, The Ghosts in Our Machine. For our listeners who may not have heard of this film, can you tell us about that?
Yeah, Liz Marshall is a Canadian filmmaker, and she's someone who was paying more and more attention to the animal question. And we became friends, and she was sort of, you know, looking at what I was doing, and we found that we had a very similar aesthetic and similar goals, and she thought, well, you know, she decided to make an animal rights film, and it's a very beautiful one, and she asked me if I would be the human in the film that would focus on all sorts of issues, from animals in aquariums to the dairy industry and fur farming. And so we spent a couple of years working together, building this beautiful film, which follows me as I do my work and struggle to do my work, and it's a really good film that it balances the good and the bad. She didn't want to make a film that would traumatize people instantly and make them turn off the TV or, you know, walk out of the theater. And so she balanced the good with the bad by showing stories of rescue and hope and change. And I think she did that really well.
I actually haven't seen that documentary because after watching Earthlings and so many other films like it, I have made the transformation into going vegan, and I felt like that was the only reason I ever needed to see those films, and I just can't watch anymore. But I definitely have recommended this to people who have not made that transition into a vegan lifestyle yet, and I'm really grateful that these types of documentaries exist. So thank you for your role in that.
Well, it's interesting you mentioned Earthlings because she didn't want, I mean, Earthlings is an incredible film that has reached many people. And she didn't want to make a film like Earthlings because that's been done. And she wanted to make something that maybe fewer people would turn off because it's such a traumatic film. And also this film was commissioned by CBC and they loved the idea. And they said, we'd like to, you know, give you initial funding for this film, but it has to be a film that people will watch, and it has to be a film that we can put on TV. And they did, and she did it. She did a really incredible job.
Well, that's great. I'll be recommending it even more than Earthlings now in that case. Any documentary that encourages people to go vegan is a good documentary. You've also founded the Unbound Project. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah. Unbound Project is my favorite thing. It's really, really positive. And it's just a different way of talking about animal rights. Now, over the course of my many years photographing the animal rights movement and the people involved, I noticed that it was mostly women who were showing up and running things. And as many of us have noticed, it's usually men who are sort of at the top of an organization. So that's interesting. But historically, it's been something like 60-80% women involved in the movement. And I thought that that was worth highlighting and worth celebrating. And so a few years ago, I asked Professor Carrie Cronin. She teaches at Brock, and she's a historian and an activist, and she's a really, really interesting woman and gifted writer. So I asked her if she would be my co-author on this project. And so we've teamed up with stories read in our photo essays and written. And what I also really like about this project is that it's women, both historical and contemporary. So stories that really needed to be told and shared of these women from the past who aren't recognized and or who were, you know, referred to Mrs. Richard Hardy, you know, like we don't even, they might be in the history books for having contributed to animal rights, but we don't even know their name. And so Carrie is also really concentrating on that historical aspect, and I'm busy traveling around taking photos of all of these incredible women. So it'll inspire people, and it has already, and I know it will. And I also know that I do what I do because I had women to look up to, even people like Dr. Jane Goodall. You know, growing up, I saw her doing this incredible, unique, trailblazing work out in the field, and she inspired me, and I thought, wow, like if she can do that, I can do something like that too. And so I want to give that to people. I want to highlight the work of these incredible, driven, trailblazing women so that other people can think, wow, look at her doing that. I want to do that too.
That's awesome. I love the work you do, and it must be really expensive. Can you tell us about the costs associated with creating the book and everything?
Yeah, it is expensive, and it's been a really interesting journey figuring out how to fund all of this. Now, I have photographed, for example, over 600 weddings in my lifetime. I've done food photography and events and corporate and portraits and all this kind of thing, and that always funded the We Animal Project until people started I started soliciting donations. You know, if you want to help me do this work so that I can do it full time, please donate. And that was hard to do because I don't like to ask for anything. But I'm really glad I was encouraged to, because people saw that I was in this for the long term, and I wasn't going anywhere, and that I was producing good work. And so slowly donations started coming in, and slowly organization started paying me for the work that I would do for them, small amounts, but still, I mean, that's better than, you know, I was always volunteering to shoot these projects. And so slowly I was able to move away from the commercial work and do We Animals full time in a way that was funded. And I get funded as well by doing speaking gigs. And there are royalties from the book as well. So, here's two things. What else is interesting about this is that I give away everything that I shoot for free. It's made available to anyone who's helping animals, whether they're academics or protesters or you name it. And so, you know, you can't make money off that, but my goal is to further the animal issues before making money. So that's the point of We Animals, is getting the images as far as possible. And so people also saw that that was an interesting thing to do. And so people would make donations because I was giving things away in order to help me to continue to give things away for free. And then my board member and projects director, Anna Pippa, said, okay, let's get you on Patreon. And Patreon is a crowdfunding site which is made pretty much specifically for people like me, like creators, who need to make money off of what they do. And so I'm on Patreon now, and people can give $1 a month or $10 a month or $100 a month to help me do my work. And this also made me really nervous because I don't like asking. But incredibly, people signed up. And so now there's a few $1,000s a month coming in. So that means I can hire people. That means I have a multimedia person now, Kelly Guerin. I have Anna Pippas as a project director. And we have new things coming out all the time because there's money to get the images out there. And it also means that I don't have to be doing commercial work. So it has really changed my life.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it's been really incredible. And now I'm just so much more productive because I have help because of Patreon. So I'm just incredibly grateful to the people who are generously donating, you know, a couple dollars a month or more, because it has literally changed my life and changed my work.
Well, that's great. I don't know Kelly, but Anna's a really good friend of mine, and she's a total genius when it comes to strategies.
Love her. I'm very lucky to have her.
Yeah, I don't know how she does it all. She's raising two little kids, and she's got a family, and she's working, and she's amazing.
She's amazing. And the three of us, Kelly, Anna, and I, are putting out a video on dairy very soon, and I want everyone to see it. Anna narrates it. She wrote the narration and narrates it, and I've never heard anything so moving. She's just talented in so many ways. And Kelly, I'm so lucky to work with her because she turns my work that is, you know, sitting on a hard drive into something magical. I'm very lucky.
Well, we're actually doing a show specifically about the Chilliwack dairy investigation in December. So hopefully it's done by then and we can talk to you about that again.
Yes, great. And the video will be out in a few weeks.
So awesome.
Definitely watch for that. Yeah.
Great timing. We're going to have you back on if we can.
Sure. And have you had Anna on yet?
Oh, yes, many times on different topics. Good. She's a wealth of information on so many topics.
She is.
Yeah. Well, your work is so inspiring, and I thank you from the bottom of my heart for being a voice for the animals, Joanne.
Well, thanks for helping me share it. And thanks for all the work you guys are doing there as well.
Now, for our listeners that are inspired by your story today, can you give them a website to go to help you fund your projects?
Sure. Well, if you want to learn more about what I'm shooting and see all of those photos and videos, you would go to weanimals.org. And that's not W-E-E, it's W-E, weanimals.org. And to support my work via Patreon, you would go to patreon.com, patreon.com/weanimals. And I would appreciate anyone who wants to put a few dollars into that, as it, as you know, helps me do my work.
That's great. Thank you so much for inspiring our listeners today.
Thank you so much.
Okay, Joanne, good luck in your future projects.
Okay, thanks so much. You too.
We'll talk soon.
Okay.
Bye-bye. Bye.
You've been listening to the Animal Voices show on 100.5 FM, CFRO, Vancouver, Canada. Please join us every Friday at noon or listen to previous shows on our website, animalvoices.org, on Twitter at animalvoicesyvr, on Facebook at Animal Voices Vancouver, or email us at radioanimalvoices@gmail.com. Our closing song is called Heading for the Light, and it's by the Traveling Wilburys. See you.